Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Okay, I'm thinking of a city. It's a diverse city with a reputation for tolerance, containing people of 180 nationalities. It's an international business and cultural capital, and it's a low-lying city located by the water and is sometimes prone to flooding. If you just tuned in, you may think I'm talking about New York. If you heard me promote this section, you know it's Amsterdam. And as it happens, the mayor of Old Amsterdam is visiting New Amsterdam today, and we are happy to welcome to our studios Mayor Eberhard van der Laan. Let's compare notes. Mayor van der Laan, welcome. Is it your first time in New York?
No, I've been several times in New York.
But how would you begin to compare New York and Amsterdam on anything?
Just
a random question.
The way like you did it. It was a nice introduction. Well, New York is 10 times bigger, and I'm fully aware of that. But there are a lot of similarities, yes, indeed.
I heard a rumor that you're actually here to steal our jobs, to tell everyone what a great city Amsterdam is for doing business. Is that why you're here?
I'm here to tell what a great city Amsterdam is for business, but, you know, trade has as an essence that it's vice versa. So when we cooperate and be partners, like we are already, of course, there will be more jobs for everyone.
Well, you can't have our jobs, but I'm curious how you're making your case, because there's a big disgruntlement right now in New York's business community that our progressive new mayor, Bill de Blasio, is raising workers' issues like paid sick leave and living wages and talking about raising taxes on people making $500,000 a year or more, which is often business owners, all things that Mayor de Blasio has been talking about. Do you want to compete with New York on those issues and say, look, we've got a better business climate?
No, absolutely not. In fact, a bit the contrary. The things you mentioned he wants, I think we mainly already have in the Netherlands as a social state. So that's no competition, no.
So how would you compare minimum wages and paid sick and vacation time guarantees in Amsterdam with New York? What do they get paid in fast food restaurants there? What do they get paid in car washes? Can you convert it to dollars or anything relative?
Well, I think the minimum is in the Netherlands around 1,300 euros. So let's say $1,500.
That's per what?
That's per month.
Oh, $1,500 per month. So less than $400 per week. I would have to do a little more number crunching to figure out just how close it is. But it might actually be a little more. That might be closer to – yeah, that's closer to $20,000 a year if it's $400 a week. And that would be significantly higher than a minimum wage worker earns here.
Yeah, well, that would not surprise me because, of course, we have the Rhineland history. In Europe, we compare the Anglo-Saxon working conditions and traditions a bit lower. We estimate them lower than we have in Europe because we think that here it is, more capitalistic.
And so do you have higher unemployment? Because the free market marketeers would say if you have, you know, higher wages, then the employers are going to create fewer jobs. Do you have higher unemployment in Amsterdam?
I think we have. In Amsterdam, we have in general a 10% unemployment now. Of course, there is a bit of a crisis still in Europe. But what worries us especially is unemployment amongst youth. That's 20%.
Among youth? That's high.
That's high.
We have that here too.
No, but we think it's very high. And in some neighborhoods, of course, also Amsterdam has a bit of a segregation in times of crisis especially. It comes up to 40 or 50%. So that really worries us.
What's the nature of segregation there? New York has been described in a recent study as having the most segregated schools in America. What's the nature of segregation in Amsterdam?
About this you will hear a very chauvinistic mayor because I think it's a tradition in Amsterdam that we're a city of merchants and for centuries they were allowed to strive their own well-being, but always people expected that they would also look behind to those who stayed behind and take them with them. So differences are not so big in our city and we cherish that very much. Have to fight for it every day because it's, of course, the market and nature does not create an equal city by itself. but we can shape it a bit.
How diverse is Amsterdam at this point?
Very much. You mentioned, I think, the 180 nationalities, and we're rather proud of that. It has always been the case in Amsterdam for many centuries that about half of the population is Amsterdam-born, and the other half has chosen to be there. So there's a little competition between the two, who is the best Amsterdamer.
How much at this point of African descent or Arab descent, South Asian descent?
We have 10% people from Morocco, some 8% origins from Turkey, and I think it's about 15% from Suriname Antilles. That's Spain.
And both cities have their intergroup tensions. I've heard it said that Amsterdam is so tolerant that it's too intolerant of intolerance. And that usually comes out in the way that says some of your people are tougher on your Muslim residents, assuming they're intolerant toward gay rights, for example, as some would be, depending on the nature of their observance. How much of a problem would you say that is in your city right now? Or how much of a tension between tolerance and intolerance of intolerance?
This is going to be complicated, but I think you're right. There is a lot of tolerance. That is partly the history of the city. Being merchants, they had to be tolerant to be successful. Yes, indeed, some of the immigrants has brought along religions and cultural habits that were not exactly in favor of transgenders and homosexuality. So we also have had that tension, but I think on the whole, the people of Amsterdam say, no, you don't touch our tolerance. And the difficult thing, may I add, is that, of course, when it comes to liberty, freedom of speech, freedom of religion, and all those freedoms, a very important freedom is a freedom from fear, and so safety is connected to it too.
Do you see that as different in the United States, or do you think we're having the same exact conversation?
I think you have the same conversation here, and in times, I think one is ahead, and in other times, the other can be ahead. But New York, like San Francisco, where I came from in the beginning this week, and Amsterdam, they're quite alike.
We are comparing notes with the mayor of Amsterdam, Mayor Eberhard van der Laan, and if you would like to ask him a question, call up 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9699. And to some degree, our cities have reputations for tolerance in different ways. If people have just a casual, stereotypical notion of Amsterdam, they may think, oh, they have legal prostitution. They have legal euthanasia. They have legal hashish coffee shops. We don't have those things. So is there something about those, that nexus that defines tolerance Amsterdam style or Netherlands style?
This tolerance is, as I said, originates from early days of Amsterdam, when the merchants had to be tolerant because immigrants in those days created added value to the city.
And very similar to New York in that respect, yeah. And I think coastal cities all over the world.
Yeah, but I think I might be a little chauvinistic about the fact that it was rather early in Amsterdam in the 17th century, and it was substantial. Did you know that Amsterdam was then 70% of world trade was Amsterdam-based. So what New York was in the 20th century, London in the 19th, Paris in the 18th, really Amsterdam was in the 17th century. And the tolerance has become an institution. For we have churches. Of course, there was a governing religion that was Protestantism, but the Catholics, they were always allowed to have churches in the backyards. So that's of course, it's a bit opportunistic, I must admit, but it has always been a basis of the city.
I don't know if you could see our phone board light up over there, but it looks like half of New York wants to talk to you.
I like that.
So Glenn in Richmond Hill, you're on WNYC with the mayor of Amsterdam.
Thanks for letting me ask the mayor a question about Amsterdam's bicycle transportation system. How does Amsterdam promote and foster a bicycle culture when New York City's recently instituted bicycle system is already in financial difficulty?
Well, thank you for the question. I must say we have a bit of luck because we are a flat country, so cycling, we already do that for a century. And indeed, it is very nice in terms of sustainability. Amsterdam is also small, so that could seem a disadvantage, but in fact it is an advantage of being small. And 50% of the Amsterdamers do cycle every day. And it's interesting to say that our problem is not to get the Amsterdamers on the bike, but we have a huge problem in parking bikes and make them... And another problem is they consider themselves a bit the rulers of town, so they should have a better behavior towards those who walk on the streets.
I have to say that the one time that I was in Amsterdam, it was in January. It was freezing cold. There was snow and ice on the ground, and I was amazed that people were biking. I don't know if they had snow tires or chains or what, and they were tying them up everywhere on every railing. I took some photos because I was so struck by the sort of ubiquitous bicycle landscape of Amsterdam, and that people kept going and people tied them up outside in the snow. So it's certainly a hardy city when it comes to bicycle culture. The caller was specifically interested, I think, in a bike share program, which is having some financial difficulties in New York. Do you have something like that in Amsterdam?
No, but we don't need to, because the average Dutchman has 1.7 bikes. So why should we share 1.7 bikes per individual?
What do they do? Do they keep a road bike and a mountain bike?
Or? Usually for in town, also because of fear for theft. Quite a few bikes are stolen. They have an old, ugly bike for daily use, but when they want to do a tour or something, they take the other bike.
The security experts say in New York the best advice is keep a crappy bike but a great lock. Jennifer in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jennifer.
Yeah, hi. I just want to say I just got back from Amsterdam. Fantastic city, but I was actually going to make a similar point, is that a lot of the comparisons are so difficult to make because your city's so small, and you just said that actually, and ours is at least, I think, 10 times bigger. I don't know how much bigger in landmass, but definitely population. So I think we have to, how do you think we can kind of, what things can we best transfer from the fabulousness of Amsterdam to New York City and its crazy largeness?
Having just visited it, Jennifer, with fresh eyes, what would you want to? Anything on first impression?
Well, it's more the people and how relaxed they are and calm. I think that's a lot of the bike culture there. You know, it's just much, much freer.
Uh-huh. And people are
feeling
more relaxed. You think it's a chill city, Amsterdam?
Yeah, not always. But I think Jennifer is right. New York is 10 times as bigger, more or less. And it creates more traffic, more tension. So that is not an asset of Amsterdam, or a merit of Amsterdam, I should say. But it is Amsterdam is not only a place where you can be born or where you come to live. It has become also a kind of mentality, and people they really get Amsterdamers, and they can live in New York as well.
Ryan in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC with the mayor of Amsterdam. Hi.
Yes, hi. How's it going?
Okay.
My question was that although, yes, New York is the great melting pot, we still do have a lot of segregation in the city, and there are many different cultures, but they often tend to stay to themselves. So I was wondering if there was anything that you guys do in Amsterdam to combat segregation.
That's a good question, but the answer would be too long if I tell you all the things we try to do, because we're not always successful. But it has been for more than a century that there is a housing policy, especially, in which we try to get representative neighborhoods where everyone can live. And we had one terrible lucky thing. Already in the 19th century, workers' communities started housing corporations. And a large part of the houses in Amsterdam are owned by these housing corporations, and they give us an instrument to make sure that we don't get very rich neighborhoods and very poor neighborhoods. So that's a bit of luck, too, that we owe to our ancestors.
Oh, Nanette in Ridgewood, New Jersey, is going to be a troublemaker because she's still thinking about our last segment on legal rights for animals. Nanette, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Yes, Hi, how are you?
Okay.
When I was there in the late 60s, I went into a very small Amsterdam restaurant, and there was a dog in the restaurant, and they told me at 8:30 at night, there's no food for you, but, you know, the dog is licking its chops. So, I mean, is that still permitted, and how do they prevent, you know, proximity of other dogs, and does that still go on?
We were just having, I know you weren't here yet, we were just having a conversation before you came up about how much pets, dogs in particular, should be allowed into restaurants and stores and other public places.
I heard one sentence, and I laughed at the term bureaucrats. Well, the lady comes from dangerous territory because I used to have a dog, so I'm in favor of dogs, and I think we have no regulations in Amsterdam that dogs couldn't be in restaurants. But of course, there are all kinds of rules on sanitary and health. So the behavior should be appropriate.
It depends on the restaurant.
It depends also on the restaurant.
They can bar dogs.
But there's no
general
rule.
Doesn't happen very much.
No, you hardly see it.
All right. Well, there you go. There's more fodder for the legal rights for animals movement.
Yes.
I got an email yesterday from our mutual friend, Ben Barber, author of the book, If Mayors Ruled the World, Als Bürgermeisters Zuden Regeren. Is that close?
Niet as close.
You say it. If mayors ruled the world in Dutch?
Als burgemeesters zouden regeren.
Thank you. Well, I was not close at all.
Well, a bit.
And his book just came out in Dutch, so he sent me that transliteration, but it didn't come to much. But he mentioned the Netherlands as a nation of cities in a Europe of cities, a fundamentally different relationship, a more supportive relationship between national governments and cities than in the United States. Would you say that's the case as Ben Barber sees it?
I think he sees it perfectly right, and I find his book very inspiring. I had the honor of talking to him a few times. But there is always a difference that should be mentioned. In the Netherlands, mayors are not elected directly by the citizens. They are chosen by the city council and then officially appointed by the government. While here, of course, you have the directly elected mayors. So I think in the United States, mayors have a lot more responsibilities and authority. And then his theory is more substantial than in the Dutch situation. But still, his analysis I share.
Don in Lambertville, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, Brian. Maybe you have an expert now. Maybe you and your people and the good mayor can clear up this story that I once heard. I would like to thank the Dutch for all their influences in this country. What most noticeable today is the architecture that we see, you know, especially in the downtown and the older areas of New York City. But getting back to the tolerance issue, I heard a story, and maybe the mayor can, or you guys can confirm it for me, that when Peter Stuyvesant first came and they founded New Amsterdam, that there was a boat came in and it had Jewish people on it. And Peter Stuyvesant did not want to let Jews come onto the island, but that the folks, his bosses back in Amsterdam, said to him, no way, we don't care what they are. We want everybody to come in, and that's how the early Jewish people came onto Manhattan over Peter Stuyvesant's objection.
Don, I'm going to leave it there, but your question is clear. And, of course, that's New York history, not Amsterdam history. But do you learn that when you take history in the Netherlands? Do you know if that's true?
Brian, that's New Amsterdam history, and thus, in a way, this man is right. It is also New York history. I don't know his specific story, but I know Peter Stuyvesant was by origin an Englishman who was hired by the Dutch VOC, the Dutch tradesmen that sent the ships all over the world. So he was working on the authority of the Dutch. And maybe, I don't know the story, but I can imagine, because Amsterdam was in those days already really a place for refugees, Jewish people from Portugal, but also Eastern Europe.
New Amsterdam was.
But no,
Amsterdam
originally
Amsterdam,
uh-huh. and that was then already the case for some 50 years. So I really can imagine that this man is right. But the interesting thing is about New Amsterdam and New York, I was in a conference where Mr. Bloomberg held a wonderful speech, but a bit too bold, about New York. And then I made a joke in my table where the Manchester mayor was. And I said, come on, Mr. Bloomberg, we founded you. And then the mayor of Manchester said, oh, no, you didn't. You founded New Amsterdam. We founded New York. So I am a bit careful on the issue. But you could argue.
I guess so. I wish I was a fly on the wall for that conversation between you and the mayor of Manchester and Michael Bloomberg. But I think the thrust of – and I don't know the particular, but I think the thrust of Don's story is true, that it was a more tolerant place when the Dutch ruled New York than when the British did right afterwards. And then some of that had to be recaptured. We're almost out of time, but two things that – need to come up when we're comparing notes between Amsterdam and New York. Rebuilding post-Sandy. Amsterdam always as a model with dikes out in the water and, you know, parts of the Netherlands and things like that. Amsterdam actually lies below sea level, right?
1.5 meters.
And someone told me your approach to managing water is not always to keep it out, but in some ways to let it in.
Yes, I think water management, as we call it, is very important, and it's really an expertise. It's, a lot of Dutch are working in it. We have a problem, though. The average inhabitant of our country is not even aware that we have all those systems and that he would be a fish if we hadn't had those systems.
Canals, really, right?
The canals is one of the early products of the water management, and we're so glad that they build them because they're also quite nice to look at.
Advice for New York? Should we have an actual canal on Canal Street or something along those lines?
No, I'm not in a position to give any advice, but I know New York is doing also a lot on water management, and we make our mistakes also in Amsterdam. Our architects built data centers below sea level. And, of course, when we have a flood, that is not a very good situation. But, yes, may I add this, Brian? I told you we were a city of merchants that were independent, not a city of kings and bishops. But the second thing is, because of this water situation, they had to cooperate. So it's a fine combination of ownership. They thought the city was theirs, but there was also the need to cooperate to keep it alive.
And everyone is always curious, before you go, when talking about Amsterdam, about the legal cannabis cafes.
I knew you would ask the question.
Am I right that there is a backlash against those because they actually do lead to more crime in those areas?
No, but in Amsterdam, we have some 200 coffee shops, and that's we have four big cities. That's two times as much as the other three cities, Rotterdam, The Hague, and Utrecht. And what we try to do is to get more distance between schools and coffee shops. So those coffee shops too close in the neighborhood of schools, they will be closed, and we will maintain some 160, which still is, I hope you trust me, quite enough.
But maybe Washington State and Colorado here have jumped over you. Are you watching those experiments to not just limit it to coffee shops, but to just make it, well, anybody can have it anyway, so maybe you don't need those districts with their problems?
Absolutely, and I admire Colorado for this because we still have a problem, what we call at the back door. It is legal to sell it to individuals, and they can legally buy it, but it is illegal to give storage to the shops, and that is a typical Dutch gedoog tolerance situation, and Colorado is really state of the art in solving that problem.
Anything else you want to say to the people of New Amsterdam from the mayor of Old Amsterdam?
That I enjoyed very much being in New York because, believe me, when I say all Amsterdamers that have been to New York, they love it.
Meeting with Mayor de Blasio while you're here?
No, I understood that he was in his 100th day and having a lot of effort to explain what he had done.
Just say pre-K a lot and maybe he'll let you come in. Pre-K.
Pre-K.
Yeah, I'll explain after the show.
Okay.
Eberhard van der Laan, the mayor of Amsterdam. A delight to meet you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And up next, margarita fans, beware. We will explain the growing lime shortage. Stay with us.